This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Joan Plowright is one of England's leading actresses, and she was married to one of England's finest actors, Sir Laurence Olivier, from 1961 until his death. Plowright is best known as a stage actress, but over the past few years she's been making more movies. She's now starring in Widow's Peak. Her other films include The Dressmaker, Avalon, Drowning by Numbers, and The Summer House. When I spoke with Plowright in 1991, she told me about her training at the Old Vic Theatre School.
It was a wonderful training, but it was very specifically for, I would say, classical theatre. It was to do with voice, speech, movement, dance, fencing. Even the girls learnt fencing. It was a very serious training and very tough. I mean, the end of each term at the Old Vic Theatre School where I trained, there were people who were told they should not continue. So it was very hard. It was very nerve-wracking. But it was a very sound and wonderful basic training.
Are you glad you learned how to fence? Has that come in useful for anything?
Well, I am glad, actually, because I played Viola in a television film of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, and I did have to fence, because Viola dresses up as a boy, with Sir Ralph Richardson, who was playing Sir Toby. And we had quite a long sword fight, which was highly dangerous because he was no better at it than I was. But at least I'd had some training. I could look fairly good at it.
In Laurence Olivier's memoirs, he writes about the first time that you met. And he describes going backstage to congratulate all the actors at a performance of The Country Wife. And he is trying to imagine what your reaction was to him. And he says, "I divined that I stood for everything that the young generation at the royal court would find most objectionable and everything that was most odious to a girl of this generation of actors who had come from North Lines. I was titled, necessarily self-satisfied, pompous, patronizing, having obviously come to visit in a spirit of condescension. I could see it all." What did you think about the older generation of actors and Laurence Olivier at the time? Was he accurate in those perceptions?
Half, yes. I mean, after all, we were very young. We had set up an outpost in Sloane Square at the Royal Court Theatre. We were doing the work of new contemporary writers of our own age, John Osborne, Harold Pinter.
Who is the
Tom
we that
Stopper.
You're referring to?
The company, the we, was the English stage company. It was actors like Albert Finney, Alan Bates, Peter O'Toole, girls, me, and Billy Whitelaw. We were most of us from the provinces, not born in London, not with Kensington, London accents. We were from all over. And we, because of the success of John Osborne's play Look Back in Anger, we were all known as angry young men and angry young women. I mean, we weren't all that angry, but we did get lumped together, and that's why I say we at the time. That was a title that was used about me in interviews, even when I first came over to New York with A Taste of Honey. You know, he represented a theatre that we were fighting to abolish.
What did you want to abolish?
Drawing room comedies, and where people came on in white flannels with a tennis racket and said, "Anyone for tennis?" It was that sort of theatre that we were trying to get rid of. We were political. We were very left-wing. And Larry, to us, I suppose, looked very right-wing. Now, that is not to say that one was not aware of a great talent. And I think what he saw when he came and said that about me was a thing that I was, along with my friends, determined not to be impressed just because he was coming to see us. We thought, quite right, he should come and see us. We've got something very good going here. At the same time, you don't have to make a decision to not to be impressed unless somewhere inside you, you are deeply impressed, if you see what I mean.
Right, exactly.
So that's your answer, really.
When did you change your mind about Laurence Olivier and decide that he wasn't just... You had pointed out you were already very impressed with him, but still he did represent the other generation and a more conservative spirit in the theatre.
Well, obviously it was when I started rehearsing the Osborne play The Entertainer with him. And here was a man who was nothing to do with the reputation, but... an actor, an entertainer, a huge talent on that stage, came on and took off his jacket and rolled up his sleeves and acted everybody off the stage with a force and a power and an energy that was very startling. Also a man who would, you know, just go next door into the pub with all the actors and talk as a human being. Getting to know him properly was a revelation, as against the image, which I think was a wrong image anyway, but which he couldn't help having achieved.
Laurence Olivier, in his book on acting, reprints some of the letters that that he wrote to you, with some advice to it. Advice on acting to you about some performances. And he said to you in one of the letters, "You don't know how lucky you are to be able to cry at will on stage. I've never been able to do it in my life."
Yes.
Was that a problem for him? And was it something that you were especially proud of being able to do?
No, because honestly, a lot of people can, you know. It isn't a gift in any way. It's a weakness, perhaps. But as far as he was concerned, I mean, he could make people believe that he was crying, perhaps more powerfully than actors who were actually crying. I mean, to be on stage, you know, it is an art form. It is a craft. I mean, you can play Juliet yourself in the bathroom, lying in the bath, and move yourself quite intensely and cry real tears. If you are actually on a stage and you do it in the same way, you are nobody beyond the first row in the theatre is going to know at all what you're doing. They are not going to see the tears. Your voice is going to be clogged with emotion anyway, so they're not going to hear. What Larry could do was project an image of somebody in great grief and crying without actually doing it. Now, that is great acting, and it is often more powerful than the real thing. That is in theatre we're talking about. On film, it would be totally different.
One other thing that Laurence Olivier wrote you in a letter that I wanted to mention, he wrote, "A humbler approach to our work is essential, but how do we equate the essential humility towards the work with the full possession of confidence required to carry it off?" And that just struck me as a really interesting dilemma, and I wonder if that's something you feel you've had to contend with during your career, the humility that you need to really approach a role and the confidence to pull it off, especially, you know, in the light of the fear of rejection that so many actors have. I think actors are very vulnerable about that.
Yes, you're right. It is a constant problem. And it varies through stages in your life. Very early on, you probably have a great deal of confidence, but because you are still promising and you haven't yet had the knocks. I remember being interviewed by a journalist who said to me, "Why are you being so evasive with me?" He said, "You are a journalist's daughter. Surely you know the golden rule. We never knock you when you're on the way up. It's only when you get there that we'll shoot you down." Now, if that is a golden rule... It's not a very pleasant one, but it does seem to apply a great deal. And therefore, once you have achieved some kind of name or reputation, the nerves get worse. Therefore, the confidence gets more shaky because you have more to lose.
Was there a period in your life where you felt that that was really at its strongest, that sense of that you had the most to lose and your nerves were shaky?
Yes, quite possibly. At the opening of the National Theatre, where my first role was St. Joan, and that was really all right because I'd done that before. We repeated two plays from a previous season when we opened the National Theatre. But the next leading role I did, I think, I was more worried and shaky in confidence in that I was playing Masha in Chekhov's Three Sisters, and Larry was directing it, and I had the sort of double responsibility of him as director and being my husband, and me as leading lady, and the worry that, it was the burden might be too much. So it was a shaky start to that.
What kind of reviews did you get for that?
They were actually marvellous, as it turned out. But the rehearsal, the preparation was the fearful time.
It must be hard when you're getting directed by your husband in something, because, there's times, I think, when you really want to resist a director. And, I don't know, when you're that close, it must be hard to take direction in a way.
Yes, it does have its problems, but then, you have to be able to argue and not feel that, for the sake of his reputation in front of the rest of the company, you can't say a word. You have to be very open about that and be able to argue as any actress would who was not married to him.
We're featuring a 1991 interview with Joan Plowright. She's now starring in the film Widow's Peak. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actress Joan Plowright. When we left off, we were talking about working with her late husband, Sir Laurence Olivier. When you both fell in love and decided to marry, you were both married to other people.
Yes.
And Olivier was married to Vivian Leigh, and this was a very well-known relationship. And she had sent out a public statement saying that Olivier was asking for a divorce in order to marry you. And this was at a time when you were both performing in a play together.
Yes.
And it was decided that you should leave the production. I think Olivier suggested this. You should leave the production. After her statement became public, what was the reasoning behind asking you to leave?
Oh, because he knew the amount of press attention that would be there, and he didn't think I was aware of the of how much there would be, which, of course, I wasn't.
Looking back, do you think that was the right way to handle it?
Yes, I believe it was. It would have been ridiculous for us both to have had to leave the theatre every night to crowds of photographers and people, wouldn't it?
What are some of the problems involved with having a relationship that's a very public relationship, whether you want it to be public or not, public in the sense that, you're two public people who audiences want to know about?
That is a decision to take very early on. It was one of the reasons why we chose to live in Brighton, away from London, by the sea, that we could bring up our children in comparative privacy. And you can avoid it, if you want to. If you wish to lead a rather secluded private life with only chosen friends, you can do so. The fact that we had to catch a train every night to Brighton from London, it was an hour's journey, put out of the way a lot of sort of social events that we might have been involved in otherwise, and which we didn't really want to be involved in. I mean, we were very, very determined to spend as much time as possible together. We had the house in Brighton by the sea, a flat in London, and a house in the country. And it was Brighton and the country where we spent a lot of time. We had a growing family. And really, people who are very much in love and bringing up a family are not news value anymore as when they're having adulterous
right.
affairs and getting divorced. They're not of that much interest. Their work is, but their private life, once it's settled, is not.
I think that's a very interesting point that you've just made. If you're just joining us, my guest is actress Joan Plowright. You took time off from theatre to raise your children. You have three children?
Yes.
How much time did you end up taking away from acting to...
Well, it was really only 18 months each time. I mean, once it was 2 years, I think, when I had each of the children. I wanted, obviously, that bond between mother and child to be there for the first 2 years if I could, without the kind of interruption of work. It was essential to me at that stage. For that time I did it, I didn't miss the excitement, the nerves, the nerve-wracking days of dress rehearsals and previews and openings. I felt a great relief at being away from it, but then suddenly the urge came back.
Do you ever get out of practice when you haven't acted for a couple of years?
Yes, you do get out of practice. It's just that thing of, in theatre, for instance, of stepping onto a stage for the first time, if you haven't done it for 2 years. I remember going back into a play at the Old Vic. I took over from Maggie Smith in Much Ado About Nothing at the National Theatre. We often took over from each other in parts. And I hadn't been on the stage for 2 years. And I hadn't realised that this production started with the curtain up. And at a preview, I went into the wings just 5 minutes before the curtain was due to go up, as I thought, and walked on stage to practice my first line and saw an entire house full of people who all stopped talking to each other and looked expectantly at me. And I realised that the house was in, the curtain was up, and I was not starting the play, I was merely practising, ran off into the wings in great confusion. When the play did start and I came on again, my throat closed on my first line and I could not speak. And it stayed like that for, I suppose, 30 seconds of an epiglottal stop every time I tried to say the first word.
This is something very much like the classic actor's nightmare, but it actually happened to
you. Yes, it is. It did actually happen. It never happened again because I was more careful, but that is that kind of shock to your system, a nervous system, coming back and being out of practice can do quite alarming things.
You've made some movies in America as well as in England.
Yes.
Do you think that there's a different approach to acting and directing in America?
Well, I mean, the film industry is America. I mean, it is America's tradition, it is America's medium, and it is therefore much more relaxed over here making movies. I don't think there's fundamentally a different approach. I mean, after all, convincing, truthful acting is the same in any country, whether English-speaking or not. An audience recognises to truthful performance. Directors and actors in America simply have far more scope and much more opportunity to practice their craft than in England, where the industry is very much beleaguered at the moment.
Joan Plowright, recorded in 1991. She's now starring in the film Widow's Peak. I want to close this half hour with a recent recording by Laverne Baker, who we'll hear from on the next edition of Fresh Air. Baker had R&B hits in the late 50s like Bumblebee, Tweedly Dee, and Jim Dandy. She lived in the Philippines during the 70s and 80s. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.